are listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
Good morning and happy solstice, one of my favorite days of the year, and we're here to mark it live. It's going to happen. The solstice turning is going to happen while we meet. So we have some folks with us today who have worked hard to celebrate the solstice where they are. Worked hard, that's wrong. Who have loved hard celebrating the solstice in various ways. And I'm excited to introduce them to you. But first, I'll start with the regulars. Hey, Michael.
Good morning, Meg. It's great to see everyone. Greetings from Peekskill, New York. This is Michael Tino.
And soon to disappear behind the chalice is our trusty but ailing tech person, Jessica Star-Rockers.
Good morning. Happy solstice. I'm going to disappear here shortly, but I will be on Twitter and in the YouTube chat, and I will be on Facebook. So you can find me all those places, hashtag The View.
So as we talk about the seasons turning, I wrote a solstice newsletter yesterday and said one thing that I love about the seasons is you can count on them. You can count on the days to get longer. You can count on winter to turn to spring in a way that I think a lot of us right now feel like we don't have a lot to count on in the human dimension of our lives in this country. I need to just name the tax bill that really was just, as my profile has said now for a while, a robbery, just a flat out robbery. And I don't know about you, but I am hoping to compost some of my anger in solstice ritual. I am being the guardian of the North, and I feel like I need all of that energy of the North to hold the wisdom of how to resist. So I think ritual can be an important part of resistance and of celebration and of deepening in. But let's start with the basics. Erica, what is the solstice? And will you please introduce yourselves? We have a lot of guests, so I've asked them to introduce themselves as they speak so that you can remember who was who.
Hi, I'm Erica Barron. I'm the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Catskills in Kingston, New York. And I am also a priestess and minister in the Temple of Witchcraft. So I sort of have 1 foot in Unitarian Universalism and 1 foot in pagan community. So the solstice, our Earth is tilted on its axis relative to the sun, which means that as we go around the sun, the various parts of the Earth are either pointed towards the sun or pointed away from it. And we here in the Northern Hemisphere at the winter solstice are pointed as far away from the sun as we can get, which is why our days are so short and our nights are so long. And the exact moment of the solstice, which is going to happen while we talk to each other, is the point in that circle around the sun where we are the most tipped away from the sun that we can get. So starting this afternoon, in just about a half an hour, we will sort of swing through that part of our orbit and start back the other way. Well, we're in one direction, but we're at the farthest point and we'll start coming back, which means the light will start coming back as we slowly tilt back towards the sun. And then, of course, at the other end of the cycle, we'll be tipped as close to the sun as we can get and all that light and warmth. So technically speaking, that is the solstice.
Thanks so much. So I know that some of you have been working on the same ritual for a number of years. And Stasha, you want to talk a little bit about that? And I know Rena was really important in making it happen. And so maybe the two of you can share information together about what it is.
And so Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. And extra special thanks to Lori for inviting me, because we're also connected through this particular winter solstice ritual. So I'm Stasha Morgan Appel, and I actually currently live in Edinburgh, Scotland right now. I used to live in the US. And 20 years ago this month, actually, it was the very first time that we did a winter solstice ritual that is what grew into a book and a CD called A Winter Solstice Singing Ritual. And the very first place that we did it There he is. Yes. Yay. Thank you, Lori. I have a very battered copy too. Lori's looks better than mine. So the very first time that we did it was at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Delaware County. Rena, did I get the name right?
Yes. This was a joint process. The Anacrusis Women's Chorus, which you were part of way back then, and the church decided we should do something together that combined words and music around the solstice.
Yeah.
And you and I were part of the original let's figure out what we're doing team.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and by now by 20 years ago now, we probably would have performed it already. And we did it 2 years in a row here in that pre-a winter solstice singing rituals format, if you want to say that.
So, Rena, do you want to introduce yourself, and then I'll talk a little bit.
I was just thinking I didn't do that. I'm Rena Jasica. I serve now, I didn't at that time, as the church administrator at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Delaware County. I've had one foot in paganism, and since about 22 years ago, a lot of feet in Unitarian Universalism for many, many years now. And this intersection is kind of what I love about all of this.
So my buddy, when I was a new choir member, my buddy, her name was Julie Middleton, and she and I discovered just kind of through talking that we both had had this dream of basically exactly what Rena said, sort of something that was a little bit more than, that wasn't just a concert and wasn't just a ritual, that was a ritual with lots and lots of music. So we approached the choir and they were interested. And I've been thinking about this over the last couple of days, and I don't remember how we ended up, how I ended up contacting UUCDC. I don't know if I was looking for Unitarian Churches with Cups groups or what.
We didn't have a Cups group at the time. And there's no logical reason that I can think of why you would have come here, except that the space was perfect.
But I didn't know that. And then I walked in.
For 1 second here and just say Cups is the covenant of UU pagans, for those who don't know.
Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah. So the space was perfect. And it was an absolutely lovely, lovely group of people to work with. And lots of conferencing and discussion with them. And then Julie and I would sort of go away and think about things. And then we would talk to choir people and then sort of went back and forth. So that first year was 1997, and this was in the old sanctuary at UUCDC, and it was beyond standing room only, actually, which shocked all of us. I thought maybe there was a spiritual need for this sort of thing, but I didn't really know for certain. And it turns out that it definitely hit a chord for a lot of people, which has just been an immense honor and lovely, lovely thing for me. So I did have the privilege, I want to say that must have been 2005, of after I had left Philadelphia, after I'd moved away from Philadelphia, of getting to come back and be part of the ritual in the audience that time in the new sanctuary at UU Delco. And that was a real treat as well. So 97, 98, 99, 2000, we did it with Anacrusis Women's Choir. And then the year after that, there were some interesting choir politics going on, and they were getting kind of uncomfortable with it. So a small group decided to do it, and we started working with the Delaware Valley Pagan Network and worked with UCDC a couple times more. And in 2002, actually right around summer solstice, published the book and CD. Julie was moving back to California, to Northern California, and neither of us could really figure out how she was going to do this by herself. And I said to Julie, well, you have to write down all of the bits that you do. And she said, well, you have to write down all the bits that you do. And somewhere in there, I said,
so not knowing the book and CD, this is something that other groups can buy and use to lead the ritual in other places. Is that?
Yeah. And actually, I wonder if Lori, that might be a good point for you.
Can I talk about them?
Yes, thank you so much.
And introduce yourself.
I am so excited to be on The View as a guest. This is the first time for me. And my name is Lori Stone-Sertoski. I actually work with the Church of the Larger Fellowship as the Director of Technology. And I have been a participant and organizer of a winter solstice singing ritual in Indianapolis. I've been participating for about 12 years. They have been doing it here for 13 years. And I have been singing in it for about 7 years. So I took a year off this year. I'm just going to go and participate in the audience. I'm looking so forward to that tonight. But I want to say that, first of all, I love that I met Stasha on a completely unrelated Facebook group. That she is all the way across the pond, as it were, and I'm here in Indiana, and she's ministering to me through her music and through this this ritual and sharing it. I'm so grateful that you all published it, and I'm so grateful that our choir director stumbled upon it and found it and brought it to Indianapolis, because it nourishes me, it speaks to me and ministers to me, and that's what being part of the Church of the Larger Fellowship is about, is being able to have ministers all around the world be able to be in contact with you. So I just want to say a personal thank you and a little bit of fangirling to Stasha and everyone who helped birth it, including you, Rena. So thank you so much. I will say one thing about the book. You don't have to be a singer. That's the beauty of this thing. It is, and you don't have to be really well-versed at like designing ritual. This thing has like full-on lesson plans and instructions and like what you need to gather ahead of time and how to like deal with all the little things that might come up. It's so good as far as the instructions. And for people who are not singers, it also comes with a CD that allows you to listen by ear rather than read these notes on a page that sometimes people don't understand how to do, but they can carry a tune if they hear it. So I want to thank you all for that accessibility aspect of the ritual as well.
Lori, you are just making me so happy because like all of the stuff that I had really, yeah, I'm going to try not to cry in a good way, because like all of the stuff that I was really hoping we would do with this, you're telling me that we have done. And I think one of the things, because something like this goes out the way it does, and you know, I don't know how it is for other people. So that's not feedback that I get very often. So thank you very much. That's extra meaningful, especially right now. So I really appreciate it.
So Jessica would love to share with the viewers and listeners how to get this. So if you could put a website, we'll be happy to share that, or however you get it. I hear it's not available at Amazon right now. So
Yeah, I'll get that to Jessica so they can get posted.
Yeah, she can tweet that out and put it in the Facebook group and everything else.
Yeah.
I'm excited that we're actually coming towards the time of the actual solstice. And we thought, rather than just only talk about it, why not actually mark it together and honor the moment of the turning? Many of us will be doing this tonight, but why not start when it's actually happening? So I think what we're going to do is, Sasha is going to lead us in with a song, and then Erica is going to, I think, right? You look surprised.
I thought, even though I was part of agreeing to that, so yes.
Okay, all right. Then Erica's going to tell a story, and then Lori is going to lead us in another song. So wherever you are, feel free to sing along. We'll all be muted except the leader, so you won't hear our voices, but we'll be there marking this time. And if you have a candle handy and you want to light that at the turning time or whatever, feel free.
So this is a song from Winter Solstice Singing Ritual, from the part. So that ritual goes down into the dark and we spend some time in the together. The dark as a good thing, as a nurturing thing, as a nurturing place, as a fertile place for creativity and other things. So this is a chant by Anne Bearhart called the Solstice Chant. I'm not warmed up at all, so we'll see how this goes. deep, deep, deep into the heart of the winter. Deep, deep, deep into the womb of the mother. Deep, 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 where there is no other song but the song of my soul. Deep, deep, deep into the heart of the winter. Deep, deep, deep into the womb of the mother. Deep, 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 where there is no other song but the song of my soul.
So the story I'm going to tell you today comes from a project that I've been doing to tell stories that celebrate darkness, because a lot of the stories from around the world for the solstice are celebrating the return of the light, which is certainly something we can celebrate. But in the meantime, I think our world is suffering from our lack of stories celebrating darkness and cold. So this story comes from that tradition. And this story is in the tradition of the Oak King and the Holly King, which is one of the old stories for the turning of the wheel of the year. So here we go. The story is told that in the beginning, there were two gods who were brothers. And like many brothers, they struggled with each other for ascendance and power. One brother was the king of the forces of light and life and warmth, and he wore a crown made of green oak branches and brought with him all growth and vitality, fertility and abundance. And he was called the Oak King. And his brother was the king of the forces of death and cold and darkness. And he wore a crown made of the prickly holly branches and brought with him all withering and decay, stillness and hibernation, and he was called the Holly King. And the brothers were identical in strength, and so year after year, the same pattern was repeated. Each year, the Oak King would grow strong and mighty, and during his time of dominance, the light would gradually increase, bringing with it warmth and abundance. But each year, at the height of his power, he would be thrown down by the Holly King. And in the wake of the Holly King's victory, the light would gradually wane. Cold would come, and the land would go dormant. But at the height of the Holly King's power, he would be challenged again by the Oak King and would fall. And the cycle would repeat again and again and again. Alone, the brothers were equals. But soon there came a race of beings known as people. The people watched this cycle, and pretty soon they began to take sides. The people loved light and warmth, and they feared darkness and cold. And so each year they would celebrate the victory of the Oak King, but they would mourn the victory of the Holly King. When the two struggled with each other, the people would lend the strength of their voices and their bodies, their minds and their spirits to the Oak King. But the Holly King was without their support. And so time went by. Over time, the people's adoration of warmth and light only grew, and so they began to invent ever new ways to find light in darkness and warmth in the cold. And finally, if they wished it, they could spend all of their time in the light they had created, and they could be warm all year long. But their efforts to stay always in the light and the warmth were not without consequences. Generations passed and generations again, and the people did not at first notice the shifts in the balance. But finally, they could ignore it no longer. The people began to notice that darkness was disappearing from the land, driven out by the millions of lights the people had created. Animals, birds, plants, and even the people themselves began to suffer the effects of light unbalanced by darkness. But it was not just darkness that was disappearing. Flee too. And the whole world began to get warmer. Summer began sooner and lasted longer. Ice that had been frozen far longer than the longest memory of the oldest person in the land began to melt. Migrating birds and animals began to be confused about when to begin the migration, and plants found themselves rooted in climates that no longer supplied their needs. The air was changing, and the winds that had brought rain and taken it away again began to flow in unexpected directions, causing drought here and flood there. The people began to see their support of warmth and light over cold and darkness had altered the balance of the whole world. And they began slowly, one at a time, to realize that the Holly King was dying. And for the first time, this thought filled them with fear. What would happen if the balance continued to be destroyed? Could they even survive in a world without the Holly King? And in the world of the gods, the Oak King realized it too. And though they had been competitors all these many centuries, he also realized that he loved his brother deeply and could not live without him. The longest night came, and the Oak King and the Holly King met again, but this time the Oak King had no heart for the fight. He lay down his sword and spear and came open-handed to his brother, who was struggling just to stay on his feet. The Oak King wrapped the Holly King in a tight embrace, and he promised to set aside their enmity and help his brother heal. On the night when he usually claimed ascendance, he realized that the world was already too warm and too light. And so he laid the great oak crown on the head of his brother, took his hand, and each supporting the other, they went out into the world to see what could be done to restore the balance.
Perhaps you have heard the Greek myth of Kore, beloved daughter of the earth goddess Demeter. Kore was all things bright and beautiful, the sweetness and innocence of the young flower child. One day, while exploring, she heard a familiar voice and followed it to a crack in the rock. It was her grandmother Hecate's voice, singing, promising wisdom. Kore was intrigued and entered into the underworld. Demeter had no idea where her daughter was. She was so distraught that she brought the darkness of winter upon the land and caused the plants to stop growing and die. In the underworld, Kore was learning wisdom and songs from her grandmother Hecate. When the time was right, Hecate took Kore back to her mother. Demeter was so very happy to see her daughter again that she brought spring and light back to us in the land. Kore, voe, Kore, voe, Kore, voe.
Kore, bright and wild, summer's blessed child, spring incarnate in joy and bloom. Corn is reaching high, fledglings test the sky, life uprising from winter's tomb.
Kore, voe, Kore, voe, Kore, voe.
Kore walks in summer's garden, Kore dances in the rain. All around her, the earth astounds with how life abounds in each leaf and root. Songs they sing to her, fruits they bring to her, gifts unnumbered on every shoot.
Kore, voe, Kore, voe, Kore, voe.
Comes the thresher to cut the grain. The leaves grow bright before they fall. The night grows long, the day grows weary, and life new grown begins to call. We are from our birth doomed to lie in earth. Kore, lead the way.
Kore, voe, Kore, voe. Kore, voe.
Every seed becomes a promise. Kore takes them in her hands. Into the earth, and into the darkness, and into the quiet lands. Kore leaves, and her mother grieves. And she sends the snow, the snow, the snow, to cover the ground.
Kore, voe, Kore, voe, Kore, voe. Kore, voe, Kore, voe, Kore, voe.
Summer holds her breath. Life comes new from death.
Kore Evohe.
Love it. Love it. Just going to say that one of our viewers, Gerald Castillo, said, as someone allergic to the sun, returning of the light leaves me emotionally pained. It's really beautiful, and I love that story. Celebrating the darkness. We are going to deepen in for about 30 more seconds, and then we have our turning moment.
So at the turning moment in the ritual, we welcome back the light quite literally by lighting candles one after the other around whatever room you're in, and the light starts to come up in the room. And as we do this, we're singing a song together. Sasha is going to sing for us that is quite familiar. So we welcome everyone to join in.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Everyone I meet, I'm gonna let it shine. Everyone I meet, I'm gonna let it shine. Everyone I meet, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. All around the world, I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, all around the world, I'm gonna let it shine. All around the world, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Blessed be.
Blessed be. We have turned. The turning has happened here online and everywhere. Viewers and listeners, wherever you are, let it shine. I'm really interested in how these rituals impact people's lives and what, you know, what kind of, what difference it makes to honor the earth and the cycles of the earth. How about you, Erica? You're fusing, and Rena, both of you are fusing earth-based spirituality and Unitarian Universalism.
Yeah, so for me, the story that I told today comes out of a project, like I said, for telling stories of celebrating the darkness. And when I served in the congregation in Bennington, Vermont, they had an annual solstice tradition that included a pageant. And I really wanted a story that celebrated darkness, and I couldn't find one. I actually spent the first year that I was trying to do this an afternoon and looked at every single picture book in the local bookstore and could not find a story that talked about why darkness was good, except the closest I could come was the book Stella Luna, which is about a bat who thinks she's a bird and is healthier when she realizes she's a bat and lives at night instead. And so I decided if these stories don't exist, I'm going to have to write them. And I wrote the first one, which wasn't the one I read today. And then in my training to be a priestess in the temple, I did a project where I wrote a complete cycle of rituals for the Wheel of the Year that take global warming into account, because I really think in a tradition that says that our ritual intentions matter and have manifest consequences in the world, that the fact that we spend so much time in ritual honoring warmth and light matters in a world that is too warm and too light. So for example, in February, there's a traditional ritual where you melt snow in a fire to sort of, with the intention of bringing back the warmth. So in my version, we put fire out with snow, because there is already too much warmth. So I think, and the story that I told today, I posted last year in the Nature's Path blog on Pathios, which is a UU pagan blog. And it got like, it was very popular on Pathios and in other places for about a month. It's as close to famous as I've ever gotten. Anyway, and so I feel like there's a, it touched a real nerve in a world where we really need rituals that honor cold and darkness because we are losing them. And so anyway, that's where it comes from. And I think it's been powerful. It has for me. And it seems to have mattered to other people too. So I'm glad for that.
That's great. We'll get back to you, Sasha. I'm glad you're back. But Rena, what do you say?
I agree with a lot of what Erica has to say. It even ties back to sort of the science around the season here. We may be at the shortest day of the year, but there's differences between the shortest day of the year and the earliest, let me get this right, the latest sunrise and the earliest sunset. And so acknowledging that this isn't just a moment, but that we spend a while muddling around in darkness, both very literally and lots of figurative ways, is meaningful to me. And even just listening to these words that, you know, I've been familiar with, and stories, most people know the story of Demeter to some extent, but most people look at the idea of her being in the darkness as a bad thing. And there were probably benefits to her in some way. So the comfort in the old stories, the comfort in the smell of the candle being lit, the comfort in going, yeah, it's still, you know, it may be turning towards light, but damn it, I just can't see it yet, is really useful to me. You know, I know it will be there. And so I see this almost more as the promise of light while we experience the darkness. And that has deep value to me. For those of us who work in churches, and that's many of us, this is not a good week. So there's promise for the future. And that every time that comes around, that comforts me.
Thanks, Dasha.
So a couple things. I wanted to go back to part of what Erica was saying. And Erica, a lot of what you were talking about is that we need darkness and we need coldness. One of the things that I think, so I'm a Quaker in the unprogrammed tradition, and I'm also a priestess and witch in feminist eclectic tradition of Roses too. And one of the things that I think is a danger that is very tempting for a lot of us, certainly this is a thing with Quakers, and as Erica's pointing out, I think for a lot of traditions within witchcraft and other kinds of paganism also, is this idea that light is good and dark is bad. And one, it's simply not true. We really do need both. But also, that there's a fair amount of racism inherent in the exclusive glorification of the light. One of the co-founders of my tradition is a biracial African-American and white woman. And one of the things that Quakerism is always struggling with is how to be more welcoming to people of color. And I know that the UUA has had a fair number of wrestles, especially this last year, around these issues too. So I think it's actually a really good thing, a positive thing, to look at how does our use of language and how reflect how we think, and how does how we think affect the people in our communities. So for me, the being able to look at, acknowledge, understand, experience deeply in my body, not just in my mind, what is sacred about the velvet darkness is actually really, really important. So I did want to talk a little bit about that. I had three things. I don't remember what the third one was. But the second one, So the community where I did this for the first 8 years or so is in Philadelphia. And there's a family who came every year, wherever it was in the Philadelphia area. So sometimes they traveled quite a bit. They came to the very first one at UU Delco Church. And the two young children in that family were 2 and 3 at the time. So they literally grew up going to this, which made me really happy. Their dad gave us a bit of feedback that they let us use in the publicity for the book. So I'm just going to read what he said. His name is Jeff. And what he said was, when I notice myself mentally griping about how short the days are, I remember the lessons of the solstice ritual. Seeds grow in the dark. Babies grow in the dark. And I can appreciate the darkness. And he's quoting from one of the readings in the ritual that is all about the magic that happens in the very depth of the dark.
You know, this makes me think about Bill McKibben's book, Earth, E-A-A-R-T-H. And he's saying we should have a different name for this planet because it is already a different planet. It's not about the future. Global warming has already radically transformed the planet. And it made me think when I read that book, what is Earth with two A's? What is Earth-centered spirituality or ritual? And how is that different? How does that reflect the differences? And that's some of what you all are starting to talk about. Lori.
Yes, and I would add to that a couple of things about particularly learning and starting to celebrate the solstice through the singing ritual is that singing in community is absolutely transformative for me. As someone who was made fun of as a child for not being able to sing, for singing off key or too loud or whatever, it's a big deal to sing. I can't believe, in fact, I just sang on The View by myself. But I would never have done that without having the experience of doing it through a supportive community like the one that has formed here in Indianapolis around putting on this ritual every year. So yay for that. And literally singing in community, you're breathing. You have to breathe to sing and you have to breathe together. To sing. And I think when we breathe together, like something magical happens. Like I think my heart rate goes down. I mean, I get calmer. And so there's a literal physical transformation in my body when I do this ritual. And not just this ritual, but other kinds of singing that I'm now, do as well. And then I would also add to it for me, as someone who's a Unitarian, 22 years Unitarian Universalist, but prior to that, evangelical Christian, for me, it was very, very helpful to have this ritual be an interfaith ritual, welcoming of, a multiplicity of ways of seeing. And I think the lines about many cultures this time of year welcome a sun child. I remember this from the ritual. And that is such a way for me to marry the faith of my upbringing with what's happening here and understand it on a much grander scale, because I'm not one of those UUs that completely throws the baby out with the bathwater of Christianity. Like I embrace it still and I get a lot of meaning out of it. And I have this really strong pull toward this naturalism and toward the pagan side. So it's not easy to be able to find one ritual where I can honor all of that, all of the kind of complexity of that. So again, I want to thank you all for that.
Thank you. Erica, you had more to say about the associations of light and darkness.
Yeah, so I've now done this sort of story writing project 3 times of trying to write mythology that celebrates darkness. And in doing that, of course, you come up with all of the associations that people make to light and darkness and that cultures make to light and darkness. So there's racial implications to that. There's even gender implications to that. So the first of these stories I wrote is about twins, one who represents light and one who represents darkness. And the people love the one who represents light and they don't love the one who represents darkness. And then you know, various things happen and they come to appreciate the one who represents darkness. But it was interesting to think about the gender of the twins, because often we also associate light with maleness and dark with femaleness. So in that story, I switched it, and the child of light is the girl and the child of darkness is the boy. And I have, that one's been out there for a while too, and lots of people have told me I should publish it. Except I cannot figure out a way to do that without racializing the characters in the story. And people who represent light and people who represent darkness certainly has racial implications as well. So it's been interesting to play with all of those things, remembering that, you know, the things that we teach as valuable don't only impact the earth, although they of course do, but they also impact how we think about the people that we associate with those things. I think, and so it's important to remember as we tell stories, that the stories we tell have like, this is, I guess this is the message I'm saying today. The stories we tell and the rituals we enact have actual real world manifestations. So if we only tell stories that celebrate light and warmth and men and white people achieved a certain enlightenment, which often means people of a certain age, and we tell stories that denigrate darkness, cold, people of color, women, young people, that is going to matter in the world. And so we need to be careful about the stories that we're telling and tell stories that are balanced and that give the world the things it needs right now. And right now we need dark and we need cold, and we need stories that celebrate women, and we need stories that celebrate people of color. We need stories that celebrate people of all ages. We need stories that celebrate people of all physical and intellectual abilities. And so I hope that the stories I tell are doing some piece of that, but you know, I can only do a little bit. It's a project that needs everybody. So
thanks, Erica. You know, here in Minneapolis at First Universalist, there's been a solstice ritual. I mean, I worked there in the 80s and it was going on then, and it's still going on. And it's the largest event of the year. The whole community comes. It's not a UU thing. It's packed. People come early to get a seat. And the center of the service is 12 minutes sitting in absolute darkness, which is a really long time. And it is dark. Like, I'm going to light the candle in the north afterwards. And they just keep saying, keep your matches in your pocket or you'll never find them, you know, because it is just, all the windows are covered. It is really pitch dark. And people with young kids are invited to maybe take them out before the silence. But it's so dark and so quiet. And that is incredibly nurturing, to get to be together in that mode of not doing, but simply receiving the gift of the darkness and the silence. It's profound. And like I say, I mean, I think, Sasha, you said, this fills a real need that people have. The fact that, you know, 800 people are thronging to this thing every year, and there's, you know, people outside the sanctuary who can't get in, and the balcony's packed. This is because we need this kind of nurturing in this, and, you know, and especially this year. I must say, I've gone before, but this year I've been, since the election, I've just been like back to earth ritual. I've been ignoring it. I've been gardening, but I haven't been doing the ritual. And I think there's something about connecting myself to the power of the earth and the moon and the sun and the planets right now that I need, because when I look around on my planet, there is so much that is so upsetting every day that I just need a bigger holder. And for me, that's not God. For some people, that's God. For me, that's the earth. That is my deepest, large connection. So Stasha, yes.
Yeah. I feel like what you're saying and what Erica was just saying before, that part of what that really is speaking to is, I think that particularly right now, it's very easy to get locked into binaries. And the political situation in the US, I'm not even gonna talk about the political situation in the UK right now, because boy, is that interesting too, is very binary. And that I think one of the really important lessons of this is that is the both and. And I was thinking about this when Laurie was, and Erica was speaking,
and about, you know, yeah, it's not just men and women and boys and girls. What about non-binary people? What about people who don't fit into neat racial categories? What about, you know, what about the both and? And for me, one of the most important things in my spiritual spiritual growth in the decades that I've been doing earth-based spirituality has been not just sort of embracing the both and in my head, but really learning it in my body. And I just felt like both of you were speaking to that. So, yeah.
Well, I feel like, you know, something that we're looking for, many of us are looking for in this time is sources for our resilience. And you know, when we talk about resilience and adaptation, we see it, you know, that we see it, on our planet, you know, the planet will survive humanity. Humanity might not survive, because the planet will do what it needs to. My personal winter solstice, ritual of sorts, has become, spending an evening at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City every time this year. The Paul Winter Consort does a big winter solstice concert there every year. And I go with friends, and part of what they do is they have a whole part of their concert that leads you through the darkest night through music and light and all sorts of beautiful things. And the end of it is actually the sun rises, and it's a gong that is being played, a giant gong that rises to the very top of the cathedral. And I've gone probably 10 years in a row now. And usually that darkest night is pretty short. They keep us there a little while, but everyone wants to get to the sun gong, right? Well, they want to get to that gong. And this year, they let the journey through the darkest night go on about 45 minutes, which is about 20 minutes longer than it went last year. And it was so glorious. It was so gorgeous just to be in that space in the cathedral. Like, it wasn't pitch dark like Meg, your experience, because I mean, these folks had to play their instruments and and whatever. But you know, the lights were dim, and the stars, they projected stars onto the ceiling of the cathedral, and it was so healing to have the longest night last twice as long as it usually does. And we were all struck by that. All the friends that I went with and I were struck by that. Just how good it felt to be in that space for longer than we expected to be. And I think we lose so much when we're in a rush, to get back to the light. The earth is going to do it in the earth's time. You know, tomorrow will be a minute longer than today, the daylight will be, or 30 seconds longer than today. It's not going to be, you know, 4 hours longer than today, tomorrow. It'll be 30 seconds longer today. So that's one of the things that I've been thinking about for the last week since I went to this last week.
I want to chime in also something that Meg said about when the people gather where you do the ritual, and that there's hundreds of people and they're waiting in the balconies. That has been the case here in Indianapolis as well. I see the solstice celebration not so much as the UU church's celebration, but it is our biggest community outreach event of the year. And we have, in fact, the fire marshals came after last year's because we had to turn people away, and they got mad at us. So they called the fire marshals, and then the fire marshal redistricted or redesignated the property where we do this, and they took away 50. It went from 300 capacity to 250, which we were already turning people away. So what we have done this year, and this is the first time we've ever had to do it, is we are actually holding solstice on two nights. So last night and tonight, so that we can, you know, offer it to as many people as possible. And I think the last thing I want to say is, not only do we do it here in the community, in the what we call the free world community, but we also go into the Indiana women's prison and hold the solstice there every year. We've done it for 10 years now. And I have to tell you, it's a we have to modify it because we can't have open flames. And we have to do it with little like electric, you know, candles and so forth. And we don't get to actually turn the lights off in the room. The lights are on the whole time. But I'll tell you what, it is even more magical to do it in a room. We usually have about 80 women who join us. They get to choose to come. And there's a small pagan group there, and they actually get to practice the song separately. And then the day we go and perform, they join us in the choir, and they actually help lead the ritual, and they do some of the readings. And it's just a very magical time. And I'll tell you what, it's beautiful in the other space, like visually, but emotionally and spiritually, it's the most beautiful thing to do it in the prison.
Wow, that's really stunning and exciting to hear that. Well, we are coming to the end of our time together. I wonder, I'm going to go for last thoughts. And I'll start with Emily. Anything that you would like to say that you haven't gotten to say?
Do you mean me, Erica?
I looked at Erica and then Emily. Sorry. It's right, all right. Totally fine. Call though, you got the E. You heard the E.
Yes. So I guess I would just like to say happy solstice and blessed Yule, and however you celebrate, that you find the stories and the rituals that will be meaningful to you in this time of darkness and as we celebrate the returning of the light.
Let's see whose name I can butcher next. Michael, you got any last words?
I really don't. This has been wonderful. It's such a gift to have a ritual on the View. So thank you all for bringing this and for sort of creating it on the fly here in our virtual living room. That's kind of, you know, what the View is for me. So thank you.
Indeed, it's really lovely to be together and to actually celebrate and hear a little bit of this book that I'm now going to find. How about you, Sasha? I just butchered your name, didn't I? Did I?
It's Sasha. You might have missed the T.
Sasha, I forgot the T. It's Sasha.
It's okay. we've been talking about this. A couple of specific winter solstice rituals. There are lots of different ways to celebrate the darkest time of the year. This is actually not the ritual that we do in my Wiccan tradition, believe it or not. So what Erica was saying about finding what speaks to you and what connects you with the earth where you are, I think is one of the most important things. And I loved that we have gotten to do this in a way that together here today, that's been experiential and cooperative and sort of like so many of the things that I love the most about ministry and about singing. So thank you all very much. And again, thank you, Laurie, for inviting me, because you're the one who made this connection. And Rena, thank you so much for doing this with me, because I said I would do it, but preferably if Rena came with me, so.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here. Erica is reminding us that there are great resources on the worship web, and Jessica will post that link. Lori, and then I know Lori and Rena have a song to close us out. And so if you'd like to say something first, the two of you, and then sing that song.
Everyone, enjoy your solstice, however you celebrate it, and Christmas and everything else that you're doing this year. Thank you so much for having us on today. And I was so grateful to be able to do some of this ritual with people from flung far across the world.
I love that my personal and professional connections intersect this way. I also want to hold out that how we, even this small gathering here, has done worship and coffee hour and everything all at once in an interfaith way, how lovely that is. And And what an interesting pause in the middle of the workday. A blessing. And good to call me back to the pause that is the solstice. I mean, that's really the nub of it, is the pause in between the in-breath and the out-breath is here in the solstice for me. So, Stasha, thanks for dragging me in. Okay.
And I hear that I misrepresented you as singing, so I apologize for that. Would somebody like to sing this song, the power song?
Let's do it, Stasha.
Can you do the low part at all? Because I'm really bad on the low part.
We've got the power. Hallelujah.
We've got the power.
Hallelujah. We've got the
power. We've got the power. Hallelujah. We've got the power. Alleluia. We've got the power. Alleluia. We've got the power.
It might not be coming off to all of you, but I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think duets go a little beyond Google on the Air's capacity. Thank you so much. We're not going to be broadcasting next week. It's a holiday week, but the following week we'll be talking with Jessica York and Annie Scott about what's new in religious education. See you next year. Ha ha ha.
Bye-bye. Blessed solstice.
Blessed.
Thank you.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.